If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everybody, it's Jim Mallard here. Welcome to the Mallard Report. The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. MALLIARD.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things. Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
I want to welcome everybody in this evening, this afternoon, whatever it is. I don't know. I'm so confused. This tie chain has me all backed up and confused. But anyways, number 600 tonight. We'll get into that after a bit here. That's way down the road. Just pay attention. So, okay. Sarah the Wood Duck finds unique gifts and animal prints at sarahthewoodduck.com. Oh, wait. Got to do that, apparently. Let's see. I gotta get that back up. Jeez. I keep clicking around and missing my ad. Oh, there it is. Sarah's a PTSD survivor. Created a small business to share the beauty of nature with the world. Support Sarah and her mission today by visiting her at her website and purchasing one of her amazing gifts, sarahthewoodduck.com. Like I said, I want to welcome everybody in this evening. My guest tonight is Leslie Mitchell Clark, based out of Toronto, Canada. Waves hello to all my Canadian friends. She is a certified clinical hypnotherapist, regressionist, on-air host, actor, and arts journalist, specializes in a number of fields. Of course she does, because she's got a lot going on here, including with work with individuals who feel like they've had have had contact and experiences with extraterrestrials and extraterrestrial beings. Welcome in, Leslie, to the show tonight. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Jim. How about yourself? How are things down in the great state of, is it Pennsylvania where
yeah,
you are?
It's Pennsylvania. Cool. I mean, I can't say too much because, you're in Canada, so I would say cold and snowy, but you'd be like, it's Tuesday, Jim.
Yeah, you're right, Jim. We've got 9 months of winter and 3 months of rough sledding. That's what we've got up here. But, you know, I got to tell you, I'm from New York City, so I love Philadelphia. And at one time when our kids were little, we were living in New York. We had a cottage in oh, my goodness. Quakertown is the nearest little town where we were. It's not far from New Hope, you know, kind of a area where a lot of New York people have little tiny places. It was a crazy place. Looked like dog patch. But anyway, but I loved it.
So let's make sure we're all working with the same thought. What is hypnosis?
Well, hypnosis, believe it or not, is ancient in the extreme. I mean, by so-called recorded history, it's over 6,000 years old, but if you accept the idea that there were other technological civilizations or advanced civilizations previous to what we're experiencing now, I have no doubt it's even older than that. And every sophisticated culture on the face of the planet seems to have some form of hypnosis that they use. And it's a powerful thing, but the premise is actually, I mean, the science of it is actually fairly simple. If the body gets relaxed enough, and, you know, the Greeks used to give people big opiated drinks before they had hypnosis, so we don't really do that now. But if you can get the body relaxed enough, then that little, you know, veil or curtain or whatever you want to call it that separates the conscious mind, the smallest part of us that we walk around with, and the subconscious mind, where all of our behaviors are formed, where our history is carried, the systems that run the body, all of that is happening in the subconscious mind. So if we can get to the subconscious mind, then we can instigate new behaviors that someone wants to adopt, and we can also disrupt old negative behaviors, because the mind is actually plastic. You know, it's nothing like what we were, you know, taught in school years ago, that it was in a static state. It's not like that at all. So hypnosis is a tool that allows us to get the body relaxed and inducted into the alpha state. That's where we want people, not awake, but not asleep, not in the delta state, not asleep. So we try to keep you in alpha. And by doing that, we can speak to the subconscious mind. And as I mentioned, that's also where our, where our memories are kept. So, if I am doing any kind of regression work, even if it's regression within, you know, this current lifetime, it's necessary for me to get the body into a fairly deep state of relaxation. I guess what you could say is that I'm an expert in the language of the subconscious. And if you were having a session, excuse me, Jim, if you were having a session, one thing you might notice is that I'm pretty much always speaking in the present tense. And that's simply because the subconscious mind doesn't understand linear time. And I think that's because linear time is a construct and it's not real. So we don't use any past, present, or future time when we're speaking with the subconscious mind. But this technique, you know, I can help people with so many different issues. I can help them recuperate from illnesses, battle cancer, release phobias and release trauma, and adopt new healthy lifestyles, you know, and at its most basic, lose weight, quit smoking, any kind of habit you can imagine. So it's a very powerful technique.
So I just listened to you say you don't talk about things in the past tense, but I'm going to ask you a question in the past tense because...
Okay.
That's what kind of goofy fool I am. What got you interested in all this?
What got me interested in this?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in all honesty, I, about more than 25 years ago now, I was having like a big midlife crisis. And I really wasn't sure what direction I wanted to go in, what I wanted to do. And, you know, my dear husband said, you know what, I'm going to buy you a past life regression. I think that you need some insight, and that's all it's going to take. So, in fact, it was my birthday, and he did buy me a past life regression with a accomplished hypnotherapist. And the experience was profound, but the big thing that I took away from that is I knew in my heart that I could do that kind of work. And probably I have done it in other lifetimes. You know, it was that strong and that familiar. And so before, you know, that's all it took to end my little midlife crisis. By the way, I did not buy a red convertible or get a mistress.
So it ended, well, it ended there, but it started there.
Yes, indeed. And so very soon after that, I got my, you know, my basic hypnosis training, and then I went on to study metaphysical hypnosis, and all kinds of other certifications occurred. But I began working in the more esoteric areas, I'd say within even a year of having my basic training done.
So... Let's see this right now. Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcast.com. Shifting Gears by evergreenpodcast.com. Okay, so I'm shifting gears because I want to talk about extraterrestrials now. So I've got you going down this one path, right?
Yeah.
When do we steal another famous TV pun here? Cross the streams and get into this whole other realm of research and understanding.
Okay. Well, the way now I have to say I have always been open to this idea. I had some experiences myself.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.
Self, particularly when I was a teenager, and I do talk about that quite a bit in my recent book, which is called Intersections. But at any rate, I always had an interest. So one of the reasons I wanted to do hypnosis was that so I could work in regression work, which I found fascinating. Well, it wasn't long before I got a job at a pretty snazzy clinic very, you know, kind of elitist part of town. So, you know, it was a lot of older ladies trying to fight back aging. That's basically what was going on there. So they were coming in for emotional facelifts, you know, do what I can. But about once a month, someone would call in to the clinic and say, you know, I'm a teacher, a professor, a doctor, whatever, and I believe that I've had some kind of encounter experience with I have missing time, blah, blah, blah. And no one else in the clinic wanted to touch this. They didn't want anything to do with it. It was just, and I find this amusing, but just too far out for them, right? You know, I guess past life regression is okay, but when it gets into the areas of ETs, no. So I said, man, bring it on. I'll work with these people. I will be happy to work with these people. And that's really how it all started. And it wasn't long before I was working in conjunction with MUFON as part of Kathleen Martin's Experience Your Research Program. And I was involved with that for 10 years. And I also worked with Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free Experiencers. And seeing people who are making, you know, reports of encounters and who wanted to have hypnosis. Now I'm working, whenever they ask me to, I'm working with Les Velez's organization, which is called Opus, which is wider than just ET experiences, but I'm very happy working with them. So before long, I just sort of, the word got out that I was just sort of one of those regressionists that was properly vetted and insured and zonified and would and love to do that kind of work.
So before I get, I guess I jumped the gun. Well, this question kind of falls into this, but because I want to go back to something you said, but I'm going to ask this question first. So there's a follow-up for the follow-up based. Anyways, this is where doing an interview gets fun because you're trying to keep, I've got live chat with questions and my questions. And anyways, first world problems, Jim. Keep it together.
Remember, there's no linear time. You're okay. You're okay.
So, well, this question plays perfectly. Has there ever been a hardest patient or one you just didn't want to work with?
Well, I think ones that I don't want to work with happens not infrequently because, well, Jimmy, you know, in all honesty, not everybody who contacts me or MUFON or any of these organizations is an experiencer. There are a certain percentage of people who are experiencing mental health issues. And one thing that I have to do is I have to be able to weed those people out because in Canada, I'm not legally allowed to work with anyone who has been diagnosed with a mental illness. Now, I'm not just talking about depression or something. I'm talking about dissociative disorder, borderline personality disorder, you know, you name it. If it's been diagnosed or I suspect it, I can't work with those people. And the odd thing is, I mean, I think I think someone can be having mental problems and also be an experiencer. But unfortunately, I'm not legally allowed to sort that out where things are now. That's about to change because I'm finishing another master's and I'll be rated as a psychotherapist, so I'll be able to work with anyone I wish to. But I'm always on the, you know, I'm always erring on the side of caution. And if someone comes to me and they tell me their story and I believe that it's really a mental health issue or possibly some combination of issues, I have a whole bunch of colleagues, from psychiatrists to psychotherapists and psychologists who are open to the ET contact phenomena who will help these people. You know, in the way that they need, because if someone has a mental health issue, it is considered beyond my scope of treatment. So there are people, and there are people that that just don't, you know, just don't feel right. I'm everything about my work and where I live, and it's all positive. And I have to keep a certain vibrational level consistent. People have to feel safe when they come to see me. They must feel safe. And if anybody comes into my space that makes me feel unsafe, I'm not going to take them as a client.
So Sarah the Wood Duck, the lady who I read the ad for, popped up. What about PTSD?
I work an awful lot in PTSD. As a matter of fact, I'm a associate at a psychology firm that almost exclusively works with frontline responders. And by that, I mean, you know, police officers, a lot of ambulance drivers, EMTs, you name it. Those dear people who lay their lives on the line every bloody day have such high rates of PTSD. It's incredible. So I do work a lot in those areas. Is that what your listener meant?
I think so.
And there's PTSD that happens with some experiences of a highly esoteric nature or experiences of high strangeness. There can be PTSD that comes with some of these experiences, and I'm able to work with that as well.
So you mentioned missing time, which is a phenomenon that I have experienced, strangely enough. That's why I wanted to circle back to that. I'm not going to bore the listeners that have heard the story before, but I'm going to give you the thumbnail sketch so you can be caught up.
Okay.
Took the family fishing. I wandered off to take pictures, you know, from across the way because Dad doesn't fish because Dad doesn't have the patience for fishing. Which is funny because I enjoy golf, but I can't stand fishing. But anyway, my patience.
Golf is different. Golf is the game.
Golf has movement.
I love golf. Yeah. I'm sorry, you can't put that. I love golf. It's zen. Golf is a zen thing. It is.
Golf has movement and chase and done. Like you could. Well, there's still some looking.
You're moving around. You're breathing the fresh air. You're moving around. There are things happening. I love it.
Okay, so back.
Okay.
So I sneak over around because we're fishing on a creek that has a bend in it, so I can get over and get a good cross the creek. You know, great picture. So I go over there. I spend about, according to my wife, who was with us, about an hour and a half over there. And she's like, you weren't coming back to help with the kids at all? Like, what, you know, she's giving me the riot at. I'm like, I don't remember.
Oh, my.
Like, I went over there and just, and she's like, well, did you at least get some good pictures? So I pulled my phone out and I have a picture of my feet and a picture of some rocks.
Really?
Yep. Which did not add to my case that, you know.
It didn't help, right?
Didn't help.
Not what we call probative evidence.
Yeah.
No good.
Did not help my case at all.
Well, it certainly is incredibly intriguing. I mean, unless you had some type of psychotic break or a seizure or some type of medical situation, what happened during that hour and a half? You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I love to explore. So there you go.
Yeah, so I had to tell you that because it's still kind of, I don't want to say bothers me, but yeah. it's not comforting.
It's bothersome because there was no psychotic break. There was no bonk on the head, no amnesia. Something happened during that time. And I assume when you took a picture of your shoes and a rock, you were probably standing up. Could you tell? if you were standing up from the pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's even stranger, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, it wasn't like, I mean, and the worst part is, you know, I'm walking along this creek, right? And then I'm feet away from, well, drowning.
Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't going to let that happen.
Well, no,
but it is really what I would call an episode of high strangeness. Was there anything else that you noticed? Was there anything about your clothing, or was there any other little evidentiary thing? No?
Nope. Just lost an hour and a half.
Well, I bet you were in the doghouse, all right.
Yeah, I was going to say, not the pictures did me no favors. At least I should have got at least one of them across the way.
That's right. The Casa de Perro for you. Yeah. No, I can dig it. Well, if you ever had the inclination, I can do this work on Skype. And we could peek in there and see what we could find. So just let me know.
Okay. I don't know if I'm ready for all that, but...
at any time. It's an open invitation.
Okay. So... You mentioned working for all these different groups. How hard is that to keep track of? Because I know when I book a guest, and you have a show as well, we'll get into that here in a minute. Mm-hmm. How do you keep track of what's going on? Because I know I get so lost in trying to keep track of where things are with FUBU and.
Well, I think that I don't have an assist. I make all my appointments myself. And I have online calendars for different things that I do. And I also have plain old analog.
Oh, no.
Plain old analog date book. I do.
So do I.
And the thing is, and I want your listeners to really understand this because it's true. When you actually write something with your hand physically, your brain exudes a little chemical that sort of ensures that whatever you're writing will be maintained in a memory engram, because that's a chemical reaction, remembering stuff. So it's really, really true. That is true. So you should write, if you really need to remember something, you know, it's good to write it down physically, and it will become a better part of your awareness.
The best way to remember things is get a pen that doesn't work and write it twice.
Any amount of times you want to write it, it's going to help.
That's an inside joke for somebody I know who's listening. My phone will probably be bouncing in about a minute, so just so you know. So you mentioned the book, and I mentioned the show. Why don't you, before we get, because we've got a whole bunch of UFO very specific questions that people want to ask you.
Okay, which is great. That's the way.
But I want to make sure we get you promoted, because I know if I don't right now take advantage of this few minutes to get it done, we'll be at the end of the show, and I'll be like, hey, you've got a website. See you later.
Okay. Okay, Jim. Well, I will tell you, I would love to hear from your listening audience. I am always available by email at Leslie, Lesley, at lightworkhypnosis.com. And that's all one word, lightworkhypnosis.com. And even if you just want to run something by me or share something, you know, I always will get back. It might take me a couple of days, but I always get back to everyone who reaches out. So I love that. Now, you can also find me on Facebook, either as Leslie Mitchell Clark or Lightwork Hypnosis. And also there's a Facebook page for my little radio show in its 12th year, and that is Our Contact TV on Facebook. So, and let's see. So the new book is called, it's called Intersections, A True Story of Extraterrestrial Contact. And it is released on the Promethea Press label, and it's available on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, wherever you Amazon, the book is available. Even in the Amazon.
I was going to say, you know, I selfishly didn't realize that until somebody sent me from a link from Canada, and it was Amazon.ca, and I went, what's that all about?
It probably is. Well, it is actually another country. And you know us. We're sort of like the nice family above the biker bar. That's kind of.
So I'm gonna tell myself right now. I love Canadians, and so.
You're not that far.
I'm not.
It would take me 9 hours. That's all to get to you.
So there's great. Okay, so obviously hockey, maple syrup, right? And last week or so. I've got into the Red Green Show.
Oh, it's funny, isn't it?
It is. Oh, hilarious. Man.
We've got a lot of funny TV. Remember, this is like ground zero for some of the finest Canadians and comedy writers that have ever lived. And it's, you know, the Second City is still running, going great guns up here, great improv comedy. And anyway, there you go.
Yeah.
So
it got me thinking about a, because he's got those little taglines like keep your stick on the ice. And, you know, like I've been thinking, now I'm thinking I need one of those. Like, so I don't know.
You need a good tagline.
Yeah. So
yeah, you need a good tagline. That's something we can think about for a bit.
Yeah. So okay. So I've got one more question before we get into UFOs. This is about past lives. It drives me nuts because people on Facebook will send me this message, and they want to come up. People on Facebook, they don't send me emails, right? It's just the people on Facebook. And they're, mm-hmm. I'm discriminated against them at this point because they're just the ones that have this great story about their past life, and they were either Cleopatra, Marilyn Monroe. it's always women, by the way.
No one's
ever Caesar or, you know. If I had a dollar for every time somebody said I was Marilyn Monroe in a past life, my studio would look a lot better than it does right now.
Well, you know, in all the years I've been doing this, Jim, do you know how many people have claimed to be famous characters from history?
Well, more than I care. Like I said, if you had a dollar for each one of them.
No, you'd be surprised. Actually, none.
Really? I'll have to start forwarding them to you.
I think the people who are seriously pursuing this, I don't know. I never seem to come up with anybody who was, who was really famous in some way. But that being said, if your listeners are interested, you can go on YouTube, and there was a show produced by the CBC. That's like our government broad, like the BBC, the CBC, and it's called Past Life Investigation. And my teacher, my great teacher and mentor, Georgina Cannon, she did all of the inductions and all of the regression work for this television show. So the idea is they were looking for regressions where they could find some type of corroborating evidence, if you will, right? So so I don't know how many processes she went through, many, like, you know, 30, 40 regression processes. And out of that, maybe they thought 15 were okay. And then out of that, I believe they picked only 4 for this actual program. But the 4 cases that they explored did find supporting evidence. So it's called Past Life Investigation. And it's on YouTube, and it was something produced by the CBC. Oh, wow, 20 years ago, maybe longer, but it's still valid.
So this is a UFO question that I had scribbled on my sheet from one of my listeners. Have you ever had an experience here that had any physical proof of their experience?
Yes. I have seen many unusual scars that have been shown to me by my clients that are triangular in shape. I have not seen these, but some of my male clients have reported scoop marks on their, or a scoop mark on their genitalia that just appeared one morning. I've heard about that. I have sometimes been able to feel implants because they are so close to the skin, to the top layer of the skin. What else have I seen? The triangular thing appears again and again and again. Now, again, I'm not sure if that is, because I think we have a number of things going on here, Jim. Not only are we engaging with different species in positive ways, but some of these events are happening in our etheric bodies. In other words, I think they're communication events rather than physical traveling. So we've got that. We also have the physical events where individuals are taken on board craft and given rides and engage and this, that, and the other. And then I believe that we also have a secret space program, a black ops program, if you will, that really began after the Roswell crash, which is our ground zero for modern ufology. And the Roswell crash resulted in ET contact that then resulted in what we call the Truman Agreement, which was an agreement made by Harry Truman with the Zeta Reticulites, who are your typical Greys, and they wanted to give us some advanced technology in exchange for DNA, which they wanted to take from the citizens of the world. And Harry Truman agreed to it. Eisenhower continued with it. And so many of these upsetting stories that we have heard from the 50s and 60s about individuals being really kidnapped and examined and having ovum taken and sperm taken, a lot of that is confined to a certain time period and also to a certain group of ETs. Now, what I believe, and if anyone's interested in that particular period of time, there's a wonderful book called The Day After Roswell by Philip Corso, Captain Philip Corso. And he explains how when this technology from the ETs was delivered, and, you know, I'm talking about stuff like fiber optics and integrated circuits and Velcro. That's what. But when this technology was delivered, it was, you know, it was all reverse engineered, and that and a bit was given to, you know, the guys at Hughes Skunk Works, like, you figure that out, and some guys over here in another place, you guys figure that out. And I think many of the people working on this advanced technology thought that it was probably Russian, because all of this ET tech that had been given to us was under the Military Office of Foreign Technology. And boy, was it. So we have a few things going on. We have a multi-billion zillion dollar secret space program that has been involved with, you know, having cadets and training and all of the above. And then we also have other types of experiences with beings from all kinds of places, and I think some of them are even interdimensional.
Okay, so I got to ask this because I hear so much of this. So you said basic grays, which means there's advanced grays?
There are all kinds of grays. There are grays that are benign and that are on a diplomatic basis with both the governments of Canada and the U.S. There are grays from a place called Planet Serpo that are a little taller. So there are all kinds of gray species, as I understand it. And most of them are, have what we would call human DNA. They are hybrids themselves. And I've also often suspected that some of the grays, like the smaller grays that seem to be involved in a lot of abductions, like they'll come in and they'll open a vortice and they'll take someone out, I'm not sure that they are fully biological. I think it's possible that some grays are more what we would call cyborgs, and have a minimal kind of awareness, because I know that you can't always speak to them telepathically. It's like there's nothing going on in there. So, and it's a telepathic universe, Jim. You know, it is a telepathic universe. The vast majority of the beings that people encounter do not need to physically speak. A lot of the times they can, but they don't need to. They are operating at the speed of thought.
Which is scary because I don't operate at the speed of sound. So, another fun question here. Is everything gray, or is there? I think I've heard blues and greens and
Boy, I have heard all kinds of stuff. Now, I hear an awful lot about beings that look very much like us, that are, you know, essentially Lyrans, come from the Lyran system. And that would include Pleiadians. I've heard about the Nordics, who are very much like Pleiadians. In fact, they're probably related, but they usually have white hair and blue eyes. I have heard about insectoids that are benevolent and loving. I'm serious, man. I am totally serious. There are beings that have evolved out of different strains of biology that are soulful and loving. So I've heard about reptilians. Some are wonderful. Some can be aggressive. In fact, if we do talk further about the secret space program and the fact that we have had embedded troops on Mars and the Moon and other places since the 50s, and I know that Captain Randy Kramer is one of the gentlemen that will talk about this and his experiences. But some of what they did on Mars and was battle subterranean reptilians.
That's a lot to process. I mean,
it is. imagine hearing it. I have learned to be completely composed no matter what anyone says.
You're doing a lot better than me because I've been doing this show for, well, 11 years like you, and I've been in the paranormal for longer than that, and some of this still just doesn't. I mean, I've heard it all before, but it's still like, when you say Mars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so far away in my mind.
Well, Jim, you have to accept, in a sense, and this is a hard thing and I'm an American. It's, you know, I live in Canada, and I'm a Canadian citizen, but I'm an American. I'm a New Yorker. And it's a very hard thing, even now, for me to accept that my government lies.
Oh, well, I accept that.
And 100%. So, you know, this is, you have to, you know, there has to be a little willing suspension of disbelief. Once you accept that we have not been told the truth, then anything becomes possible. And it's in Canada, it is exactly the same. For instance, I don't know if you ever had the late Paul Hellyer on your show. Maybe you did. He was so lovely.
I did not. Disappointed to say that. But he was a good guy.
He was a wonderful guy. He was, for those of you who don't know, he was a very big Canadian politico. He was a vice premier, and he was for quite some time. He was involved in, he was a minister of security. Oh, forgive me. I'm going to get so much bad flack for not remembering. But he was a big deal in the Canadian government. And before he died, I was at a convention with him where I was speaking, and he told me that to his knowledge, right then, and I'm guessing this was 5 years ago or so, he said to his knowledge, our Canadian government had diplomatic relations. I mean, full-on diplomatic relations with at least 70 different species.
Now, my question is, how do they keep that secretive, because that's 70, we'll just say one-on-one, right? That's 70 different people with knowledge of said events.
Well, I think that one of the biggest ways it stays secret is because, as you know, military personnel are sworn to secrecy, and many of them believe, even though they don't agree with secreting information, they are honor-bound not to talk, which is why we get these deathbed things all the time. You know, the guys that are dying that say, oh, by the way, you know, I saw this and this was part of that. So, but I think by and large, anyone who is military is very much dedicated to protecting the safety of the planet and their program. I mean, their party line is that, you know, this is the way we do it, because we are to be treated like children, like the great unwashed, like we can't handle it, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. I think the people of planet Earth have long been prepared to handle positive ET contact. And I mean, going back millennia into the sands of time. And I think we are the hybrid beings, frankly. We're the hybrids. You know, I think the highest form of life that evolved here on Earth naturally would probably be something along the lines of a Sasquatch. You know, I think that we had help and we were upgraded and we're the hybrids.
Well, I'm sure you've heard the conspiracy about lizard people and all these other things on Earth.
Well, yeah, I don't know about the lizard people, because from all the historical and from the information, and especially the amazing work done by the late Zechariah Sitchin in translating the original Sumerian cylinder seals and getting, you know, like the complete story. If this gentleman who was a genius, if his translations are correct, then we were seeded by a race that, you know, we look like, and the gods created man in their own image, sort of. But however, the Anunnaki were taller, and they had highly developed psychic abilities and other things that that we're just coming into on our own. But we are carrying remarkable DNA. There is a school of thought that says that those with O type blood are from that original seeding of mankind, that original blood group, that type O is the first human blood group, and the other types evolved later for various reasons and with various other interventions. So I know I have O blood, O negative, in fact. I'm talking about O negative blood. I have O negative blood, and so does one of my children, and it is quite rare. And I do have to wonder if there's something wonderful about carrying that, you know, forward, you know, how many years, 650,000 years.
See how positive you are, even though you carry a negative with you everywhere you go.
Ah! I'm deflecting negativity. I deflect it. I'm like Teflon.
And you're from New York, which, I mean, you started two in the hole, and look how well you turned out.
Oh, thank you. Hey, man, I there is nothing like my hometown, and I have to go because I'm so homesick. I'm going to go, I think, maybe next weekend and drive down and see some jazz, maybe a Broadway show or two, eat a bunch of Italian food with my husband, and it's going to be great. So I'll get my fix. As a matter of fact, I think it's that hot dog water from those hot dogs that float around that water. I think that is the secret. That is the key to a long life.
Well, it's the secret to something. We're not going to say what, though. So I looked it up because I was interested. According to the Pew Center for Research, so I want to give them credit for this, 2021, 65% of Americans believe that there is intelligent life that exists on other planets.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we have crossed that divide now. More than half the people on the planet are open and waking up. And I don't mean politically, you know, I'm not political. I don't mean in that way. I mean a spiritual kind of awakening that makes us understand that we're all one person. I mean, we're all one people, rather. So there's a lot of waking up. You know, I think the recent information, and this is kind of a staggering figure, but I believe that, now the reports, at least the MUFON reports, are saying that at least 14 million people have filed reports of encounters. And that is the size of the city of New York. You know, that's an incredibly large amount of people. And I think it's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, because how many people go out and look for a reporting group to report their sighting to?
Yeah. Exactly. Many people are fearful. And you know, one of the things I want to say, the message that I want to get across, I guess, about why I do what I do, is it's not just about curiosity or material for books or any of that kind of stuff. I want to help these amazing people who are experiencers, who are carrying messages and important information. I want to help them to integrate those experiences into their lives so that they don't have insomnia and all of the other things that come with repressed memories. I'm not sure the ETs totally understand how damaging it is for us and the way our brain works to have any kind of memory suppression. And I also believe that memory suppression, no matter if it's been done by this secret space program or by ETs, I don't think it lasts forever. I think we are so curious that eventually all of those memory blocks that they may have tried to use will dissipate. And I know that because I get past them every day. And I think maybe people come see me when the memory blocks are done. Maybe it's like that. You know, maybe they're motivated, they're drawn to get the answers around the time that that memory block that's meant for people not to be afraid, that that memory block just dissolves. I mean, implants dissolve after a certain amount of time. We know that. We know that from removing them and also seeing them dissolve once they are exposed to air. Oh, who was that wonderful doctor? He passed away too, not too long, but he was the guy who was really famous for taking out a lot of interesting implants. I'll remember his name in a minute. But
as I say, in about 20 minutes, you'll remember after we're done.
anyway, there you
trust
go.
Me, that's I, all. I trust me. I have those thoughts all night. I wake up and scribble stuff down, and I wake up in the morning. I'm like, what is that going to do? The show's already over. But so you talked about implants there, and now I've got a question for you about those. Are they always... Because again, this is my bad UFO reporting for tonight. I've always noticed they were in the hands or the back of the neck. Is that true?
I think they can be in a lot of places, and I also think that they can move. Now, from my own, I guess my own research, from what I've heard from my different clients, I think there are two types of implants going on. I think there is a cruder kind of implant, which is used by the secret space program, which may be collecting some sort of data. Who knows? But you know, I think what's very interesting is, you know, we all emit our own unique brain signature, which is something that ETs know about and have known about. So they don't need tracking dots. This paranoid thing of, oh, you know, they're listening to me, they're tracking me. I have never seen any evidence of that, any clear evidence of anything like that, except that some implants, it's Dr. Lear, some implants Dr. Lear discovered are emitting some kind of radio signal, or what he called a radio signal. There's something going on with some of these implants. Now, I think that most of the implants that are given to experiencers by benevolent ETs are kind of like what we would call step-up transformers. I think they are designed to stimulate our pineal gland and the other things that are important if we are to engage in telepathic communication, astral projection, and some other disciplines that are completely part and parcel to how ETs function.
Which is interesting because, again, trying to figure out how something that is so non-tangible to me functions is just that two steps up the ladder that I'm trying to wrap my head around, which leaves me speechless, which isn't good for when I'm supposed to be talking.
I didn't mean to make you speechless, but I do. But yeah, I think this is an important point. I have not seen anything negative from implants. Either they dissipate. Sometimes some of my clients have had a little tiny, like a BB type deal that appears to have been in the sinuses, but then will fall out eventually. Now I had one client. Oh boy, this is fascinating. This gal, I think that she had been really targeted. I think her father was involved with different, I don't want to use the word maybe espionage, but different secret programs in the government. And she and her brother had both had experiences. And she had a tangible implant that was on, it was on her upper left arm. And remember I said I could feel it. I could feel it under the skin. I've had some. This was one of those where I could feel it. Now, the other interesting thing about this implant is it was magnetic. You could put you could put some kind of metal thing, light metal thing, and it would stick there. So there was some magnetic property to this implant. Now, at the time, I was working with a guy who's now a director at Gaia. His name is Sid Goldberg, and Sid was making a documentary about this whole implant thing, and he was able to get financing so that we sent her to Montreal, and she had a surgeon remove the implant, and we had it studied, and it was indeed anomalous. Some of it was calcification, which is what happens when anything is under your skin, but I think the main core of it was metallic in some way, but perhaps not an identified metal that we would find on our planet. And I know that the scientists who did the analysis with the spectrometer and all that said it's a question mark. We don't know what this is. We don't know. But it has metals, and it has a kind of a shape. It has a shape, an ovoid shape. It's not made of body tissue, although there was some calcification, but it was not made of body tissue. So go figure. I mean, it remains a great mystery.
Well, one day we will crack the mystery.
Yes.
So, okay, let's go back to your practice here, because now I'm interested in this. So let's just say, I haven't had one, but let's just, for the sake of this conversation, say I had an experience with an ET.
Mm-hmm.
And I call you up and say, hey, I kind of need to rehash this because mm-hmm. I need to understand, and, you know, all the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Questions I don't even know I have. But I have because I'm that kind of guy. So how does that work? So I call you, and I'm sure you have a process. I just don't get to, you don't say, well, I have a 9:30 tomorrow.
No, not at all. It's like I said, I do. If it's possible to meet with the person before we do a session, I will do that. But with everything we went through with COVID and what have you, that's not as common as it was. But I always have at least one in-depth, an intake, I will call it. And I ask people about their history and their health. But above all, I listen. And if I feel that the experience is legitimate and should be explored, I will express that to that person, and I'll let them think about it. And then a certain percentage of those people will come back to me having decided to have the regression. Sometimes people just want to tell their story, but they're still too fearful to explore further, if you know what I mean.
Oh, trust me, I've heard that before.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they don't. But, I do my best. Once I've really honed in and I know what's going on with that person, I do my absolute best to make them feel safe and comfortable. And they can either come see me at my treatment space, or I can work on Zoom. And I didn't think it was possible, but I got to tell you, it is. I do it all the time, not by choice, but because it was born out of necessity during COVID. But it also allows me to work with people in any location, right?
Yeah, as I said, that definitely opened things up for you.
Absolutely opens things up. It allows me to reach more people and help more people. Because remember, a lot of the times, Jim, when experiencers come to me, especially lifelong experiencers, which most people are. In fact, I don't believe there is anything but lifelong experiencers, but that's another conversation. But these people have sometimes, they've really been victimized by they've been through medical tests and MRIs, and maybe they've been through, psychiatric processes and medications. And very often they will have, some kind of a chronic thing going, like IBS, and they don't sleep, and they have terrible nightmares. They're afraid to go to sleep. They sometimes are very agoraphobic or antisocial. So I am sometimes in mental health care, the last chance Texaco, if you know what I mean. They've exhausted all other medical interventions, but still the issues persist. And maybe they've even been to a psychiatrist who says, well, there's, you know, you're not mentally ill. I'm not sure what's going on, but you're not mentally ill. So this is often where somebody is at who comes to me. And I can also say that the majority of my clients, I do get some younger ones, but the majority of my clients are in midlife. So there seems to be a point of reckoning that I was talking about before, where maybe certain memories start to pop through. And, you know, but that seems to happen more commonly in midlife. Maybe it's because we're, many of us are so busy with our families and careers in our 20s and 30s. I'm not sure why it is, but I do think it's part of the maturation process and part of being ready to accept the person, the people that they are, and the unique people that they are.
So I referenced earlier, I've been doing those shows for years, and tonight's number 600. Set this up the long way by saying, normally when I talk to an experiencer, they're either down one path, right? They're either ghosts or Bigfoot or aliens. But on the other hand, there's the trifecta people, right, who've had all three experiences. I have yet to find somebody with two out of the three.
Uh-huh.
But there's a bunch of people with three out of three or one out of three.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, if you were to ask me, Jim, what is the great commonality that experiencers share? Because I got to tell you, it's all kinds of people from all kinds of cultures and religious backgrounds are having these experiences. It is certainly not confined to any one type of person. Different educational levels. I've got some people who are highly functional, who are like judges and attorneys and doctors, and I have some people who can hardly get by on public assistance. So it's a wide gamut, but the one thing that they all share is psychic ability. And I think, again, we come back to the issue of communication. Now, I will compare it. Say you're Jane Goodall, and you're in the middle of Africa, and you've discovered a new type of ape or bipedal being, and maybe four of those bipedal beings have an epiglottis and can form words. Now, wouldn't you spend your time working with the beings that could communicate? And I think that is what's happening. This is all about communication and the speed of thought. And some people we all have psychic ability to a certain extent, but it's like musical ability. It travels in families. It travels in genetic lines. And I believe that is the commonality, and that is what the ETs, most of them, are looking for, beings with whom they can communicate.
Let's just pull this back a second. I think that's who we're all looking for.
Yeah.
Human-wise, I mean, at the rudimentary level, we're all looking for people to communicate with.
Yes. That is a soul desire. And we are in the same, with these beings that visit us, we're in their soul group. They're feeling some sense of responsibility for us, and yet I think they want to still see us do it ourselves. So guess what, citizens of the world? We have to put on our big boy pants and big girl pants and realize that we are all one. We have to eradicate hunger. We have to feed the people. We have to feed the people of the world. And we have to stop blowing each other up.
Facts.
That's it.
So, last fun question. I got one more serious question and then one fun question. We've got about 2 minutes. So,
okay.
Just be aware. Are there aliens who guard and protect certain people?
I believe so, because I believe a large percentage of human beings are actually working and sharing and communicating with beings, and they live a kind of a double life where they function as humans in their straight world, and then in the night they're either taken or they astral project. So yes.
And this is the fun question. Favorite breakfast?
My favorite breakfast?
Yes, that's what I'm talking
about. I love the full English breakfast, or I call it the ugly Canadian breakfast. So it's some couple eggs scrambled, some bacon, some rye toast, home fries, maybe a couple of pancakes.
I hate, you know, this question came from a listener months ago, and I've been asking it for months, and I don't know why, because all it does is make me hungry.
I know, and now I'm starving, and it's 10 at night for me, for God's sake, and
I
for
understand.
You.
Yes, I know.
We shouldn't be eating.
I know. I'll finish this glass of water and pretend it was pancake syrup, and we'll call
it good. I'm going to do the same thing. You can't see it, but I have a giant thing of water here, too, designed to help with this very problem. So,
well, Leslie, I appreciate you tonight, and be safe out there.
Thank you, Jim. It has been a joy to talk with you, and I would love to come back anytime. You just give me a shout.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
And there we go. So I just want to take 30 seconds here. And tonight's 600. It kind of snuck up on me. I wasn't paying attention. I, Germantown Runner will tell you this. I really, truly don't pay attention to those numbers at all. So I just want to take a minute and thank everybody for tuning in through the last 11, 12 years, whatever it is. So, yeah, it's just been a wild ride, and we'll keep after it. So I'm humbled to be here still. So we're just going to keep going.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments to subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.